This episode is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack.
You think you're rough stuff, Toscani. Martial arts hero, chop suey crap. Let me tell you something. You're not bulletproof. You're not even a good cop.
Really?
Guys think you're above the law. Well, you ain't above mine. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Additional support of this episode comes from William Pope and Paul White, who says happy birthday to Andy White. This episode is for you. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 80. I'm Scott Johnson, and I'm joined tonight by Brian, I'll kill you in your own kitchen, Dunaway.
That's one of my favorite lines. All right. We have cast Steven Seagal as our quote-unquote hero, so we need someone equally as bad on the other side. See if you can get me somebody who looks like they were riding in a car with Chevy Chase and Skeletor, driven by Mark Hamill during Corvette Summer. Seagal!
That's awesome. That is so
Oh, my
funny.
Gosh. What a weird mixing of DNA you just produced.
I'm telling you, he looks like Chevy Chase and Skeletor somehow just like
totally, dude.
Made mad love and just meh.
Yeah, singing Holiday Chase Road, man, as he drives. That's awesome.
Yeah, Holiday Road.
Also here today, Randy Unknown Sharon Stone Jordan.
That's interesting, knowing what I'm about to say. Aloha, Scott, Brian. Amongst a cavalcade of bullets and mullets, an aging Pam Grier dressed in more layers than a wedding cake, and Sharon Stone sporting a supercut and no makeup whatsoever, will duke it out to see which lady Scott Johnson will disparage the most. Find out right now on Film Sack.
Ladies and gentlemen, this episode brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Also, finally joining us, Brian, always whispering Ibbit.
Ooh. I'll do the whole show like this.
Could you do that? Just make sure it's really bad acting, by the way. Make sure that's part of it.
Hey, you're stepping on my thing.
Sorry, go ahead. I don't want to step on your thing.
Why does every 80s movie drug dealer look like Paul Reiser during his Evening at the Improv days?
Nice.
Do you think Paul Reiser was selling some stuff backstage is what you're saying?
I don't know.
I think so.
Could have been.
They all got that weird mullet ducktail freaking thing.
The ducktails.
And then the jacket, the jacket over the t-shirt, and what's the deal with airline food?
Anybody, what's the deal? Well, here's the deal. It's a movie. It's called Above the Law, and it stars Steven Seagal, and Scott Fletcher has the info, the skinny, the 404.
What?
And I can't find him. Here he is. Scott Fletcher, 411, what did I say, the 404?
He has the missing page.
Link not found.
He has the dead web page. You ready for that? All right. Here it is. Scott Fletcher, take it away.
Above the law. In this gritty action thriller from director Andrew Davis, martial arts expert, and the Chicago Vice cop, Nico Toscani, played by Steven Seagal, who also co-wrote the script, takes on CIA operatives who are allowing drug trafficking into North America.
What's going on?
Nico's superiors tells him to back off his investigation and the agency's connection to Latin American drug lords.
Putting
his family's lives at risk. Pam Grier. Sharon Stone and Henry Silva. Co-star.
That's it. I don't know what the hell he was doing.
Oh, who cares? God. I love
it's
it.
Like,
it sounds
like, it's
a
like Don Knotts and Kermit the Frog had a baby.
Yeah, big yeah. time.
We're riding in a car with Mark Hamill getting a Corvette Summer.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right, right. God.
Holy cow.
Isn't that crazy? I did not expect it.
I didn't want to laugh because I didn't want to miss any of it.
You were, oh, no. You were,
yeah. Man, is it too soon to just play that again?
Yeah, I'm way too soon because that thing's a minute long. I don't know if I can take it again. But he, I see, here's as much as I heard when I got it. I went like this.
Above the law.
And I went, okay, that's it. That's it right there. I'm good. I'm not listening to the rest of that. I'm going to save it for the show.
Go back every time one of us names the movie. You have to go back and replace it with that.
It's pretty ridiculous. Scott Fletcher, I don't know what you're on, but
that's great.
Keep
I love
smoking
it.
That, whatever that is you're smoking.
Above the law.
It is above the law. Now, look, I got a secret kind of love for Andrew Davis, director and co-writer. Yeah. He brought me The Fugitive, which is one of the best film adaptations, first of all, of a TV show, and just great movie, period, and was a Best Picture nominee and won a Best Supporting Actor Award for Tommy Lee Jones. The guy knows how to make good movies.
Oh, yeah.
This
yeah.
movie is a big piece of shit.
But not no. this one.
No, I disagree.
I disagree. Okay, all right. So let's get right into it. We'll get the cast and all that in a second. Why, Randy Jordan, is this a good movie?
First of all, because of the 2,000 times someone says Nico, oh my God, if it were a drinking game, you'd have to drink a drop every time someone says Nico.
You'd be dead.
It almost worked its way into my daily usage. I'm walking around like, hey, have you finished that report, Nico? I'm sorry. just like the end of every sentence, Nico.
The only only other time I even heard the name Nico is that a Grand Theft Auto 4 game that the main right. character is called Nico. Other than that, brand new name for me. Like, that's just not a common movie name.
That's funny because near the end, I kept thinking, oh, they keep calling him Toscani because, like, constantly. So I didn't even notice the Nicos because of all the Toscanis.
Yeah, there was a double call up here. Yeah, for sure.
Here's a weird thing. There's a guy actually named Nico Toscani. This is like a recent weird news bit.
Oh,
there's a guy in the real world named Nico Toscani who won the right to wear a pasta strainer on his head in his driver's license photo.
What?
Are you serious?
Are you making that up?
No.
That sounds made up.
I looked up the name.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, weird.
You know what? He was above the law.
Doesn't that sound like what they, if they had Steven Seagal on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, they would be like, so, you know all this other, you played Nico. We're going to ask you about another Nico.
Totally. But Brian makes a good point. Having, you know, demanding that your photo in your stupid driver's license picture has a cheese grater on it is above the law. That's
totally above the
putting
law.
Yourself above anyone else who wants to do
wow.
stupid stuff.
That's
so
true.
Really early in the film, they used a ton of stock footage. They used a ton of pictures of Seagal when he was a little baby.
Those were weird.
Yeah. Hey, I'm even scared of baby Seagal. I mean, that kid
was so weird, dude. He had that big forehead and the dead eyes and the whole thing.
When they do that in films, they can only do that once. It's like once they use that for a film, it's not like true. In your next picture they can say, got any more of those baby pictures we can use?
Yeah, nope. It sounded so documentary-like where he's going, so I grew up in a thing. In fact, it felt like he was improv in that. Like, that wasn't scripted.
So for whatever reason, this guy was not only an officer in Vietnam, but was still in his early 30s in the late 80s. I don't understand
that.
Yeah, but this guy has – they have Dick Nixon saying – I swear to God, the president of the United States says – no one is above the law and no one is below the law. I've stopped the movie right there. This is the greatest movie I've ever seen.
All right. So
if you can get Nixon to rehearse the title of your movie, win.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And this is before any kind of digital whatever. We're talking 1988 here, folks. We're talking like a year after Big Trouble in Little China. That's to give you some perspective on the time.
And, you know, I say I dislike this movie, but on the other hand, it also kicked off Steven Seagal's series of movies that were kind of like this, which I love all of them for their – it's kind of like sci-fi. I love all of them for their cheesiness.
Oh, yeah.
And they all had – the big thing was that they all had three words. I mean, that was the big, you know, big comedy joke, too. It's like
– right.
And you could interchange them. So, you know.
Yeah. He right. just – he – and he – and I'm sorry, but for all the dissenters out there, the guy in his prime – looked at least like he was kicking ass.
He was. He's totally tough.
Out, for those of you who haven't seen Seagal films, and what's wrong with you? This is not his prime. This is the lesser of like the four that made him who he is.
Oh, for sure. I would say for sure. I agree with that.
I'd put Under Siege. Oh, really? Right.
Hard to Kill and Out for Justice are the two.
Out for Justice is pretty dang good. It's hard to beat Out for Justice.
And it's hysterical because he plays the same character in all of them, right?
Yeah.
He's some sort of martial arts expert cop. But in Out for Justice, I don't remember exactly what. All I know is he got wronged and he goes around kicking ass. Like that's
yeah. Here's what this is the mistake they made with Steven Seagal. He was a man in need of a franchise. He needed to be a character, that guy in black, and he needed to go ahead and be that actual character through a series of films. Give us a Dirty Harry style, you know, run. And instead, they just opted for this whole, all right, well, new movie, new premise, new thing, but pretty much same
basically
guy.
Basically the same guy.
Yeah.
Looking through his rap sheet here, the only sequel that I'm seeing is Under Siege 2, Dark Territory.
Which was douche. We got Marked for Death, Hard to Kill, Above the Law, Out for Justice.
Hell of a cameo in Machete that came out.
He was actually... He was actually at his prime when he hit Under Siege, but yeah, it's such a well-known movie.
Did you notice that there was machetes in this film?
And
he's actually using, he like takes a machete off a guy and chops a guy's arm off and so forth.
I did see that.
Well, it was weird to see that having seen him in the movie.
I'm going to go ahead and assume that's what they wanted me to believe when they showed me that really badly shot special effect. But yes,
yeah,
somebody got his arm cut off. We're sure of that.
You guys realize he was like an environmental agent and like On Deadly Ground and Fire Down Below.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
That's not the same character.
I love that.
He tried to save the world in two different movies.
I'm convinced we're going to want to get our Busey on again pretty quickly because that's what you do with a show like this. And we need to get Under Siege all up in here. And I know it's the most mainstream. I realize that. It's the most successful, certainly, of his films. But also the one that I think I like the most because it's...
It is.
Yeah, I don't know.
My favorite is, of course, I love the movie Exit Wounds because of Anthony Anderson and Tom Arnold.
You know what? This is the first movie that we have talked about other movies way more, but they're all Seagal movies.
They're all Seagal movies.
Right.
It's a whole new classification. But
before we move away from Steven Seagal, tell me you read the bio on IMDb that Steven Seagal clearly wrote for himself.
Yes, I did.
I think I did read that. It's horrible.
The one that begins, Steven Seagal is a striking and somewhat boyishly handsome looking and usually impeccably dressed action star who burst onto the martial arts film scene in 1988.
That's the one.
Oh my God. The second paragraph starts with, Michael Ovitz saw star value in the imposing looking Seagal. The high octane action movie genre was in full swing and Seagal's debut movie, Above the Law, was wildly received by action fans. He had to have written that.
Yeah. At his box office drawing power, Seagal began to infuse his film projects with his personal and spiritual beliefs. Now later later in this bio it kind of goes a little south, doesn't it, Ibbot? It's not all roses in there. They talk about let's see, where is it? Oh, maybe this isn't the one. Something I read somewhere was a little IMDb. It was Wikipedia was kind of negative on like his later career. His direct-to-video days.
No, it showers him with accolades all the way through the end, unbeknownst to many. In 1997, Seagal publicly announced that one of his Buddhist teachers, His Holiness Pinyar Rinpoche, had accorded Seagal as a tuiku, the reincarnation of a Buddhist lama.
Wow. Uh-huh.
A lama?
And remember, this is Steven Seagal. In real life, Steven Seagal has five kids. Three of them came out of Kelly LeBrock. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Come out kicking.
So I like the end of this, and this is how I'm sure he wrote it. It says, while his box office appeal has somewhat declined since the halcyon blockbuster days of the mid-90s, Seagal still has a very loyal fan base in the action movie genre and continues to remain a highly bankable star. Bull poop.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
For cameo appearances.
He could. He actually could, though. I mean, if they really rallied behind him and they put him in the right vehicle.
Yeah. Well, what's happening is the Tarantino types love him.
Yeah.
And so they're going to put him in stuff just like Rodriguez did with Machete. Yep. And you're going to see this come up with him just like they do with the dude what played Kung Fu. I can't name his name. That killed himself in a closet. What's his name? Kill Bill. Bill guy.
Kill Bits. Is that what you just said?
Kill Bits.
Kibitz.
Awesome. No, but you know what I mean. And then other guys like that.
He was walking the world, and then he decided to do stuff in the closet.
calling him highly bankable. Look at his video list. Oh, and man. I don't say movie list. His video list goes back year, the last few years. It's nothing but straight to video stuff and three other things. He was Rogelio Torres in Machete. He was Roland in The Keeper. And I swear to God, not straight to video. He was a character named Cock Puncher in the Onion movie.
Yep, he was Cock Puncher. I don't know what that means. I don't know what the character does. But I'm going to assume. Like,
yeah, we know the one thing he does.
I'm going to assume the worst. Elite Justice, or Chew Justice is this thing he's in now. This it's a dramatic series, right? This Elijah Kane character. I don't know what this is, but I'm all in. When's this come on? Let's see here.
He's the lead character in this thing.
It's 5 out of 10. Not doing so hot.
Everything he does is 5 out of 10. Don't look at that.
All right. All right,
everything he's ever done has been 5
yet,
out of 10.
Yet another Canadian thing, though. It's a Vancouver production.
And he's also a big Justice. He's a big fatty now. Now I realize he's 60 now.
He's not a great. He's not like he could come back. You know, we saw the Karate Kid do that for a little while. You know, you do the karates and then you blow up and you kind of have to rethink your life. You go dance with the stars, lose a little weight.
Did that happen? Right. I didn't know Macho is all fat. I didn't know that.
You remember Macho getting all big and fat?
I miss that. I know, what's his name? I'll be you're a daisy if you do. What's his name? Freaking
Kilmer.
Oh, he is a beached whale right now. He looks horrific. Yeah. But I see he's a guy who I think give it 10 more years.
Fantastic in that.
Tarantino's going to come knocking at your door, going, I got a picture for you. I got an idea. Let me lick your feet first, but then come on, let's do this movie, and it'll be amazing.
I'm loving the IMDb bio page on Steven Seagal. I'm still hooked on it.
It's so funny.
In his so he's got like facts about him. What's the top of this thing?
Keep talking like that though. He has facts about. He wrote this thing.
Well, has another child with Arissa, the nanny during his marriage to Kelly LeBrock, for which her third child was named after. Oh, for which their third child.
That is weird.
So he pre-Schwarzenegger'd Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. He did.
Just nobody gave a rat's ass.
And his first personal quote, I'm hoping that I can be known as a great writer and actor someday rather than a sex symbol.
Neither.
By the way, I may have made it sound like Above the Law was a film subsequent to Hard to Kill. This is his first major motion film.
Yep.
I didn't mean to make it sound like that. He actually gets better, is what I'm saying.
He was skinny Joe Jimmy in this, very thin and very lean, and I guess probably in his early 30s would have been.
36, apparently, when he 36 and Above the Law.
Oh, really? Wow.
Popular discussions about Steven Seagal on his bio page, also enjoying this bio page on IMDb. Mm. The mentality of an ape, no talent, total zero fool. People who are fans of garbage should not be, and that's as far as I can read. Because I don't have the
overture. What are you, on YouTube all of a sudden? Something happened there. IMDb is pretty bad, too. What am I saying?
Really?
Yeah.
All right, so Pam Grier's in this, another Tarantino favorite, dragging her out of the...
Jackie Brown.
Henry Silva, the guy who Brian thinks looks like Chevy Chase and Skeletor. That guy is made to be a bad man in everything he does. That's what he does.
Yeah.
And I loved him in this. I thought he was ridiculous, over the top, the most black and white bad guy I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah. And you wanted him dead.
Oh, yeah. It was great.
Yeah. You just know right at the very beginning that he's... Yeah.
You wanted Seagal
he's
to get...
long for the world.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It was fantastic. Sharon Stone, a young, very early career Sharon Stone. She had only done, I think she had filmed right around the same time. The one with Schwarzenegger.
Total Recall?
Yeah, Total Recall.
Oh, well, this was made right after Action Jackson. Like, she went from Action Jackson to Above the Law.
Yeah, and this was a stinky part. Like, this was not a part you give to, because she, for a period there, became, you know, I'm trying to think of an analog today. Who's she like today? I know a good one. What's her name? Megan Fox. She's like the Megan Fox of her day.
Oh,
she had this period where everyone gave a crap.
Don't say that.
Everyone loved
that's
it.
Such a put down.
Well, it's sort of.
I would really like to believe that Sharon Stone is a good actress.
But I don't believe that she's
that great. Now, I think she's gorgeous, so I'm not going to do that this week. I think she's beautiful. I think today even she looks amazing. Yeah. I think that she's always been a looker, and I will give her points for her work in, the Western, the Sam Raimi movie.
Quick and the Dead.
I thought she was really good in that.
Yes.
Not that you had to be too multidimensional to play that part, but I thought she did a fine job.
How did we forget about Alan Quartermain in The Lost City of Gold?
Well, we just mentioned it.
Yeah, that's gonna be somewhere in our.
Remember those knockoffs?
Future, sure. So yeah. Oh, yeah. So I'm kind
of Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Remember those knockoffs? I don't know. I'm kind of miffed here that you're giving her points for that. Whatever, you know, like Cooking the Dead.
Love that.
This is someone who won awards for Casino. Yeah, she won awards for Basic Instinct.
Yeah, what'd she win for Basic Instinct? What'd she win on that stupid movie?
Golden Globe.
She got the Golden Beaver Award, I believe.
Golden Globe. She got won the Golden Globe she got for the, Best Actress.
No, she got the picture? She got the Who's Gonna Flash Newman Award of freaking of the Golden Globes. Look, that's fine. I just don't. I think it's a. Go back and watch that movie. I've seen. Was it Fatal Instinct? What the hell is it called? Basic Instinct.
Basic Instinct.
Those names all.
Fatal Instinct is a hysterical spoof, by the way.
It's a mashup.
It's on streaming.
But when I, that's probably why I remember that. I think I've seen that. But she's not good in it. She's kind of crappy in it. Now, I can't say for Casino because I haven't seen it. I haven't seen Casino. I don't know.
Oh, you haven't seen Casino? No. Oh, you got to see Casino.
Is it good?
It's fantastic.
Pesci's fantastic.
De Niro is fantastic.
Okay.
She was nominated for 4 different Golden Globes in the 90s. Besides those, she was also nominated for The Mighty and for The Muse.
No, never saw either of those either.
Albert Brooks movie.
I probably don't have. I don't have the right to even say because I just haven't seen her work outside of the salacious, stupid.
So just to finish your point with mine, when Megan Fox gets her 4th Golden Globe nomination,
yeah, right,
the Earth will end in fire,
And she'll give you 2 mangled thumbs up, dude, when she wins. Those nasty effing thumbs. Anyway. Chichi Ramone's character, I can't believe that was his name. That guy was awesome. I don't know who that actor is, Miguel Nino, but he's one of my favorite things. We'll hear more about him later in the in the clips. Who else of note? Nobody really. That was it. Everybody else is sort of... Yeah.
Nelson Fox, you know, Chelsea Ross, he's done a few things. He's
what? Who's that?
he's that actor that's in everything that you go, that guy, Chelsea Ross.
Let me take
a
look.
He was in Basic Instinct, Drag Me to Hell, A Simple Plan.
It's a terrible.
You know, he's been in a bunch of Mad Men.
Oh, okay.
He's been
this
a bunch
guy.
Of crap. He's been in everything, but he's just, you know, you don't really know him.
No, I do. Yeah, you see his face and you go, "Oh, that guy," but you're not really sure what you've seen him from. Love that guy. So I'm with you there.
Oh, yeah. That was his. Well, that was his buddy in Saigon, basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
And he was also in Basic Instinct.
And he has got some freaky face, crazy expressions. Like I really dig that. That dude, he's still working today. He was in the Chicago Code recently, which I heard was awesome, and it got canceled. Mm-hmm. It's too bad. I heard it was really good. It was the S.H.I.E.L.D. people putting that on.
Oh, he was in Mad Men. Okay.
Yeah. Recurring.
His name was Connie.
Connie, yeah.
So he had a girl's name in the show, too. Sheesh.
Yep.
In a show called Mad Men.
Yeah. He was on My Name is Earl's where I remember him.
I think we're getting to the point now where if you're older and you're white and you have a suit, you're on Mad Men at some point.
Can you smoke? Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're in. Can you smoke a fake cigarette? Good. We'll take you anyway.
Hey, can y'all explain something to me? I mean, okay, I watched this in 2 different parts. Did Seagal have – this is going to sound wrong. Did Seagal have Pam Grier's baby? Were they –
I actually put this in my notes. Okay, so
Right. No, you're treading on water here, or treading lightly, because you're afraid it's going to be like, well, maybe this is Italian or something. No, that was a black baby, dude. That was a black baby.
Slow down.
Was it adoption?
It was intended to look Italian.
Well, it didn't.
They went with a baby actor or actress. I don't remember whether it was a boy or girl.
Then they need a baby with ducktails, and that would have stopped all confusion for me completely.
Ducktails. Awesome.
No, African American baby.
I went back and looked at it. Darker than either Seagal.
I was wondering if there was like subtext there because, you know, in his office after she supposedly dies, he's got pictures of her like with them constantly. And then at the very end, all of a sudden you finally see the baby and it shows up. And I'm like, what?
I'm trying to find baby in the credits. I can't find one.
What?
I agree with you. I stopped because you know what it was? There's a scene late in the film where they're at a table and finally they lift the baby. You can really see the baby.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is going to sound horrible, but I thought the hairstyle on the baby was cornrows. And so I went back and realized, no, it isn't. It's braids.
It's just braids.
Regular braids. They were just trying to
Come on. I mean, Sharon Stone's like the whitest girl ever. I mean, expect us to believe that Sharon Stone and, you know, DuckTales over here had a baby.
She
that was,
thought it was Pam Grier's. Man, Brian, you are it didn't so make any sense to me. Racist. I can't
That's
even
believe
it. I just
couldn't
teasing.
Understand what they were trying to pull past us. Of course, they did just like 15 minutes earlier have the valet who was at the gates. He was at the gate at one point in time, and then he was driving a car. Then he was back at the gate. So I don't know why I'm trying to nitpick about the baby.
There were a few moments like this. So, Andrew Davis, yeah. I'm serious, was going to go on to so much better than this. This was just like a weird early career thing with his good friend Steven Seagal, and he had so much more in him. And I'm so glad he did, because I love The Fugitive still to this day. I just cannot. I never not enjoy watching that movie. So freaking good. What else is going on? We got a just quick trivia. Due to film scheduling constraints, the sequences at Chicago Summer CES, or the Consumer Electronics Show, were actually filmed at the November Comdex in Las Vegas. A film crew carried press credentials and pretended to be a news show filming about products in the booth. I like the tech angle there. That's pretty awesome.
I did too. Yeah. I thought it was pretty neat.
Okay, here's one of my favorite things in the movie. So Ron Dean and Joseph F. Casala, specifically, who play Detective Lukic and Lieutenant Stroza, were together, were in another film previously, Code of Silence. They would meet again in The Fugitive. This guy was in Batman Begins, this Joseph F. whatever. They're actual cops.
Oh, really?
That's why they don't act.
That, okay. Yeah. See, I was going to agree with you that the director got a lot of really interesting little bit performances out of people.
Yeah.
And there were times when I was thinking, gosh, that's just too spot on.
Yeah.
You know, there were bunches of them. These guys who only appear in one scene where they're doing a stakeout or whatever.
Yep.
They're really good. The scene where they come and arrest Nico at his house in the middle of the night.
Yep.
There were two people in that scene that I didn't feel like were actors. I felt like they were actually staging an arrest.
Yeah. They're using, they're using real dudes, and they use them because not only on set as like, you know, and this happens all the time in TV, and these guys work in a lot of TV. If you look at his credits, it's crazy. But he does, you know, he'll come on set and say, well, NYPD Blue producers, that isn't exactly how that interrogation would go. So I would tell you this. And that's usually what he does. But they end up putting him in movies. Like, he ends up just showing up as a...
That scene.
And once
so
you see
though.
A picture of him, it's like, okay, I know exactly who.
Yeah. You've seen him a bunch of times.
Millions of times, yeah.
Yeah, I like him a lot.
He's deadpan. He's really, really deadpan. He's goofy looking, but he's really deadpan in his delivery. Yeah.
So you're kind of making the Danny Trejo argument that what makes him so great as a rough guy is the fact that he actually spent 11 years in prison.
Partially, but also because he looks like the devil incarnate. That helps a lot because he's just so scary looking. But in this guy's case, they were just, you know.
These fill-in guys, though, they really did look the part.
Lent a weird air of authenticity, but also kind of weird bad acting. But somehow that works. I don't know.
The meatpacking plant stakeout is the one that.
Oh, we'll talk about that for sure.
Got me. That's the scene where I felt like half the people in the scene were just standing around impersonating themselves and not actually acting.
Right. I have further issues with that scene, but I'll get to that later in my What I Learned segment. Let's see what else. The sword fighting sequence was staged using Steven Seagal's own martial arts students. When was the sword fighting? Remind me.
At the very beginning. It was in that opening.
Dojo.
In the dojo. It kept flipping back and forth between.
But those were swords? They were swords. I don't remember them being swords. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were totally swords.
All right.
You don't remember him chopping somebody's arm off in the dojo?
Yeah.
That's how Seagal rolls.
Just took off one of his students' arms at the elbow and said, that's it.
Oh, it was what I loved about that scene was they managed to end it with him. He's slowly taking on more and more students until they actually show this beautiful move where he takes one of the students and punches another student with the first one. Yeah. Oh, it's so awesome.
Go
watch it. It's on streaming, folks. Go watch that just for the first scene.
Just that first scene is all you really need to see. I noticed a Paul McCartney cameo. Not really, but the guy looked just like him to me. And I thought of you a bit. So it's that nasty bartender that kept spouting off.
Oh, yeah. He had a goofy... he had some goofy name, too, that...
I couldn't find his name in the credits.
He was Chi-Chi.
Was he Chi-Chi?
I think he was Chi-Chi. I think you're right.
I think he was Chi-Chi,
Chi-Chi Ramon. That sounds right. Yeah.
Chi-Chi Ramon,
Okay.
Yeah.
He looked just like him to me. And he had
like
that,
an Italian.
And they had that same hair that McCartney had for a while in the 80s. That weird mullet.
That
weird effing mullet.
Oh.
Way too much whispering in this movie. The sound was way down on everything. All the dialogue was just way down and dubbed.
I wouldn't know. I had mine cranked.
Is this a specialized form of angry acting that Seagal does?
Yes. It's his own. He's cornered it. And man, not until Cockpuncher did he really let it go.
I'll tell you what makes his acting so angry. He's got the best eyebrows of anybody in Hollywood. I mean, he can just make those things just... They just like, I don't know how he does it, man. They look so angry.
Yeah. He was already starting to thin in this a little bit. His hair, I mean. Which
couldn't
is fun.
Tell it.
Well, how could you tell with the freaking crazy gel? Crazy gel.
Yeah. That would hold
that
was, it.
That's as much gel as his hair will hold.
Yeah.
There are multiple scenes where he goes chasing after somebody outside. And by the
way, God.
Seagal runs like Richard Simmons. And then he catches them and his hair is still perfectly slicked back.
I don't know what he runs like, but it cracks me up. What? It's
anytime.
But see, it's funny because one second you're going, he looks so stupid. Another what does it going? Man, he looks like he's really moving fast.
Yeah, it is right, a weird combination of. I was never comfortable watching him run. I'll say that, and it was always to music like this.
Oh,
really egregious use of music.
You know what I hate? I hate the flute. If that's the flute, I hate the flute. I mean, I really hate the flute.
That's a keyboard. That's
Is it really? Well, like it sounds like a flute.
This was like David Sanborn's Castaway songs, basically.
You captured that from the first dojo scene, right?
Yeah, and then it showed up later again.
Fighting dojo sounds like a spa. It's not like they were like, I'm going to fight you. These other guys have to get a massage right here, though. So we're going to put on the right music for that.
Pizza delivery. Yeah. It was like a porn.
Do you remember the Smurfs and the Magic Flute? Yeah, I hated that, too. Yeah.
I'm just seeing if I've got some David Sanborn. I'm trying to find something similar to that, like...
That's it,
it's
dude.
Like this kind of stuff.
Yeah, 80s fusion jazz. Oh, that's so bad.
I think
so
we can safely say the music in this movie was horrendous.
It was utter shite. It was the steam on your shite.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Horrible film music. Horrible. I
don't think I've ever heard someone say the word shit steam. I think that's the first time I've ever heard. It just came out of my mouth for the first time I've ever heard it.
5 seconds later, repeated it.
Well, I don't know. The music just, real bad.
It's already trending on Twitter.
Yeah. And as a result, the whole movie felt like a bad TV cop drama from that era, like a Hunter episode, maybe.
It was a bad TV cop drama from that era.
Yeah,
that
Hunter could have jumped out of nowhere with his patches on his elbows. Or was that, that was the other guy. Anyway, it doesn't matter. All of that era, all of that, like,
Hunter had that too.
Oh, totally Hunter did. And seriously, there were moments in the car chases or something where I thought, no, Hunter's just going to pull around and stop everybody. He'll just be in this movie. Like
By the way, I'm going to give you the description of another film, and I want you to tell me it's not for this one. A Chicago cop is caught in the middle of a gang war while his own Conrad shun him because he wants to take an irresponsible cop down. That was Andrew Davis's previous film, Code of Silence, starring Chuck Norris.
Wow.
Hmm.
He's right with Chuck Norris. Let's try Seagal.
It's interesting. He's rolling with this, rolling with the martial arts actors there for a while in his career.
Yeah,
totally.
Probably friends and, working
deals
and whatever.
By the way, my favorite Andrew Davis film, Scott, not The Fugitive. Mm. My favorite Andrew Davis film is A Perfect Murder, the Michael Douglas, Gwyneth Paltrow,
that's a great
Ego Mortensen.
That's a really good one. Yeah.
Mind freak.
Had forgotten about that. That's an excellent film.
With the possible exception that, Gwyneth Paltrow looks like Michael Douglas's daughter.
Right, yeah.
Supposed to be a married couple.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is also, unfortunately, though, responsible for giving the world Shia LaBeouf.
Holes, dude.
For that, I think Andrew Davis should be in prison.
Well, he brought
He
brought LaBeouf out of TV and said, hey, here he is as an actor.
I'm not going to give LaBeouf any more grief for right now after seeing Transformers 3.
Oh, God.
What? Oh, really?
I'm going to give him a little bit of reprieve for just a little bit, and let's see what the next thing he does.
Wait.
Are you saying you got LaBeouf for fever?
I'm not saying I'm in love with the man. I'm just saying I'm going to lay off him.
You're saying he was good in Transformers 3?
I'm just saying Transformers 3 he finally broke even to the point that I don't hate his guts.
No, really? All right, so stop this.
He could,
you're killing me.
Tip,
you're forgiving him for Indiana Jones, basically.
He could tip it. No. Yeah, well, maybe a little bit. But he's tipped the ship to almost upright. And if he can just...
It's not just that, though. You're trying to forgive him for Wall Street Money Never Sleeps. And
well,
for,
see, I didn't see, that movie didn't exist for me, so it doesn't
matter. If you ignore these films, they just aren't there. I'll you know what? I will take. I haven't seen Transformers 3 because I dread it. Yeah, but when I do, I'll keep an open mind.
I enjoy Transformers 3 in spite of Shia LaBeouf.
Better than 2.
Better than 2.
Way better than 2. 2
definitely
sucked.
Better than 2.
Well, two is a giant steaming turd. Mm-hmm. I hated that movie so much. Hey guys, Scott here to talk briefly about Audible.com, the sponsor of this fine episode of FilmSack. Hope you're enjoying it. Audible.com, dude. Love the audiobooks on Audible.com. They got way more than just that. Have I mentioned 75,000 downloadable titles, including periodicals, all kinds of good stuff, not just books? But mostly books, and the books are amazing. Well, you know I'm a big Game of Thrones fan. A big Song of Ice and Fire fan, generally, the whole series. Roy Dotrice is an amazing narrator, and guess what? He narrates the fifth book that just came out a few days ago. That is George R.R. Martin's A Dance with Dragons, A Song of Fire and Ice and Fire, Book 5. Don't get that ice and fire mixed up. The nerds will get you. Really awesome narration by Roy Dotrice, who also did 1, 2, 3, and then 5. I think he skipped 4, but he did the rest. Amazing guy. If you want to get this book for free, or honestly, any audiobook for free on audible.com, it's super simple. Go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack and get a free audiobook download today. But above the law. But no, what I was going to say was Fugitive, and you mentioned Perfect Murder. Also, big fan of, his other movie, Under Siege. That was the other one he did.
Yeah, it was the other movie, which is one of my favorites.
Oh, love that movie.
I actually like Under Siege better than The Fugitive. That's right.
Under Siege to me is like Call of Duty 4. It's like, I don't know. It's like one of the first blockbusters. It's like a military video game.
Mm-hmm. You know what should make you sick to your stomach? That between those huge, huge movies that we've just named that Shia LaBeouf has tried to ruin, this guy must be made of money. Mm. He is like 25 years old, and he must be a half billionaire by now.
He's raking it in. There's no question about it. Did you guys see his other movie, The Guardian, the one with in this? Kevin Costner, Ashton Kutcher. And
it's the swimming one.
Yeah, yes. It was
Not Waterworld. Let's clear that up. It's the one that's it's like they're the Coast Guard or something.
Yes. Yeah.
How was that? Was that any good?
It was a good movie.
I love it.
I actually went and saw it with a friend who was in Coast Guard Reserve. He'd been in the Coast Guard professionally for the first 10 years of his adult life. And oh my gosh, it was like going to see Pushing 10 with a air traffic controller. Don't do that.
Well, I have a thing for Costner that he's never fallen out of favor for me. I've mentioned on the show before, so I will see that at some point. I don't know why I haven't. I think I would. I think Kushner, what the hell's his name? Ashton Kutcher. He keeps me away. He keeps me away from things. There's like a weird buffer field around him that keeps me out of projects he's in.
You have seen Butterfly Effect though, right?
No.
It's a really good film.
That's that's a pretty good film. You should see that. Yeah.
Yeah. I tried. I went to the theater and literally there's like a force field that pushes me away. Like I can't get in. Every Kutcher thing, I just, I can't even follow him on Twitter. I can't use Twitter when I follow him.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah, it's weird. Got a trope. Wow. You guys want to hear a trope?
Oh, please.
Shooting in the car again.
Oh, yep. I called it before it happened. As soon as he got on the roof, I was like,
here comes a car shooting.
Yeah, he's going to shoot through the roof, try to shoot him while he's hanging on the thing.
But Seagal turns it around on him.
Oh, I love what he was doing.
Yeah.
The fact that he was strangling Rico there in the car.
He was strangling the dude freaking car.
Oh, yeah. That was awesome.
That was so many cool points for me.
Yeah, high on my list of favorite things about the movie.
Yeah,
except
I didn't know you could choke anybody from a roof of a moving car. Didn't know you could do that. Didn't know it was an option.
Mm. This guy also would get really good, this director, really good at stunts later in his films because these were bad for the most part.
And you got to remember, Seagal does a lot of his own stunts in this movie. So they had to have, some relative safety, right? He has to.
Well, his were okay, though. Don't you think? Yeah. It was mostly like guys getting their arm cut off or getting shot in the face. They looked terrible. That looked horrible.
Yeah, I agree.
Lots of sort of, you know, the old idea that you and I could make a little Super 8 film in my backyard when we're 12. I'm shooting an arrow at you, and right now you're a zombie and you don't have an arrow in you, but I fire it, and the next scene is, bloop, suddenly there's an arrow in you.
Yeah. There was a lot of that in this movie, and it comes down just to inexperience of the director not getting the right shots, him seeing things that aren't actually there. And so, it was really choppy and edited.
We're also so used to now computer generated arrows flying through the air and into somebody. We're used to that.
Yeah. He simply just didn't get the shots. I mean, he just didn't set the shots up right.
Yeah. It's like it's afterthought stuff. Like, shoot, we meant to shoot that in the guy in the face. But I missed that.
That's just the inexperience of a young director, but, you know, he's done a lot better later on, like Scott said. So I forgive him.
Yeah. Well, he's fine. When I saw Indiana Jones jump out of that pipe and Tommy Lee Jones not go after him, I went, all right, this guy's good in my book. I like that a lot. That was really good. I'm going to go watch that again. I think this weekend.
You know what? I want to call an anti-trope. They actually went either way to avoid a trope.
Right. Something that could have been a trope, and they went the opposite direction is what you're saying.
I was actually shocked that it wasn't a trope. And the chief is a real working man and not a screaming crazy person.
Yeah, that's true. He's actually an actual police cop.
So anti-trope.
So I'm going to play. Here's the anti-trope, Sam.
Halt, sinners!
So that makes you stop and go back.
Right. That's very good.
That's not bad.
That's very good.
Nice.
Yeah. Considering that's all I have at my fingertips.
I've got another anti-trope. Maybe this film is onto something because there's another whole anti-trope.
Well,
is this
one any better?
What'd you do to my dog, you asshole?
Maybe not.
No. Halt, sinners is much better.
All right, well, let's do it official.
Halt, sinners!
All right, what's your anti-trope?
Even from her first scene in the film, Pam Grier is like considered the sexiest woman around, right? She's at a post-baptismal party and people are gawking, these dudes are standing around. She's so hot. And then, you know, she gets hit on in the car in the very next scene and so forth. She's dressed, but unlike every other film that tries to make this point, in this one, for some reason, our sex object is dressed like a Southern Utah housewife.
Yep.
She is.
It is the strangest thing. The whole movie.
Very conservative, business casual, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But she was getting gawked at by like 58-year-old gray-haired men.
Yeah.
It was gross. Mm-hmm. Gross. By the way, I just want to confirm something. But did you just a little while ago say, I didn't do it? And he said, I don't care. Did you just recreate the tube scene?
That's the fugitive right there.
I can love that. You're making me want to see it.
One of the best lines in the movie.
I know. Anyway.
It was the one-armed man.
Got another. Speaking of her, the shocker. Okay, spoiler, shocker. But the plucky female partner might get shot and almost die in this movie.
Yeah.
He really likes her and he hangs around her all the time. He's always talking to her and they're joking and jiving. And the whole time I'm going, when does she get shot? When does she get shot?
You know she's going to get shot. It's just a fact. And you're just
and
waiting
it's the
for
whole
it.
Slow motion shot falling down the stairs.
No.
And did he go back and check on her? Nope. He waited until he waited until the next day, pulled up in a cab.
How'd that go?
He probably rode off in the subway and said, I hope somebody finds her.
Yep. You know, dude, that's pretty good Seagal there.
That wasn't bad at all. And then I had another one here. It's where a guy who can just tear your head off and strangle you while you're driving and all this other stuff is really just at his heart. He's just a total soft family man going to church. And he's just all about how his kid smells and.
Speaking of church.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've got to talk about the church.
How many Catholics, I know Catholics, but no Catholic that I know does as many crossovers, you know, doing the cross as much as they do in movies.
Genuflection. Yeah, and I'm sorry to say, I grew up in South Texas. My friend is 99% Hispanic. Yes, they do. Are so many Roman Catholics. They genuflect when they get out of the car. They genuflect crossing the threshold. They stop at the holy water and genuflect. Yes, they do. That was actually quite realistic to me.
Really?
They needed more holy water by the time they got through this movie.
They're all out of holy water.
There were two things that really blew my mind about the whole church angle. One, a strange priest comes up to you and says, come with me. I have something to show you. And you follow him? Are you kidding?
And you say, and when he says,
I'm
come
not
down
a little
to the,
boy. Why not?
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, he says, come down to the rectory. And Nico says something like, I haven't been down there since I was a little boy.
I'm sorry.
This was clearly made before the scandals. And then here's a weird thing. So they try to get them all. This woman goes in and puts a bomb in the church. And not only does Nico know there's a problem, you know, and that something's about to happen, he seems to know precisely when the bomb's going to go off.
Yeah.
And my only explanation for that is he could hear the action music that we could.
Oh, yeah, totally. But that's when it became a Hunter episode again. Even the bomb went off and the way people jumped, it was like the stupidest jumping, like just fake smoke and a guy leaping over a camera in slow motion and just bad.
Yeah.
Just bad. And then cake them all with ketchup and hope for the best.
Man, that's
stupid.
Oh, there's a scene like in the speaking of blood stuff, there's a scene in the parking garage where one guy gets shot. And before he gets shot, he's got blood all over his hand. I'm like, is that ketchup?
Totally, dude.
Did you guys see that?
You want to dip your tater tots in it.
Yeah.
It looked fine.
Yeah, it did not look, yeah.
It looked just fine. All right, speaking of just fine, do anyone else have any major something you want to cover for clips here?
I really want to talk about during clips because I just know you caught it. So.
All right. Let's see if we were on the wavelength or not. I got this first clip. Is love this character? Oh yeah, the guy with the teeth that Brian was talking about.
Yeah, I didn't mention it during the show.
In the beginning, I was really hoping that this would stay his character throughout the thing, where he was acting kind of like a yokel and kind of funny and kind of
his buddy throughout the whole.
Yeah, like True Lies. What's his name? I can't think of names today.
Arnold
Schwarzenegger's buddy, Tom Arnold.
Arnold.
That kind of. I thought that's what you were going to get. We totally didn't get that, but. Yeah. At first I thought, and here he is sort of speaking for the first time.
You ever seen chemical interrogation before? These assholes are agency? We all get paid by the CIA, but these guys are from the page that ain't even in the book.
I don't know where that horse went, but I saw it run over to the west side of the thing with the barn. Like, I love that hick thing going.
That's the reason. Now, since I've just heard that clip, I don't even have to see the clip. I can remember now why I wrote that. Hey, Toothy McToothy, you might want to close those lips before you eat some bug, because he was, man. He was all like, fur.
Yeah.
He was totally using
and his
teeth
were almost like parallel, like out, like sticking out.
They were funny.
It's great. And sadly, they just turned him into another suit wearing CIA double crossing, whatever.
Yeah.
Bah, bah, bah. Don't mess with Pam Grier, says this clip. She's in a car and some douche
Settle
walks
down,
up.
Down, Jackie Brown.
Someone walks up and talks to her. Here it is.
Excuse me, but I just had to stop and tell you that you look like the sun sitting on the waterfall in the springtime, baby.
And you got 5 seconds and three are up.
Say, you ain't got to be like, hey, you know, like Lady Cockney boyfriends too, you dig, but you have a nice day just to say.
Were we still saying do you dig in the 80s? Was that still a thing to say?
Yeah, I don't know, but it was pretty smooth.
You were even, not.
I wasn't.
I want to hear Randy say in casual conversation, you know, I could really go for a coffee, you dig.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I can actually see Randy saying that.
Can you?
Mm-hmm. I can. I think he's actually told me that on Twitter before.
All right.
Say, hey, how about we go get the coffee?
You did?
I don't know.
You did?
That was
you
pretty
did?
Good. See, that to All me, right. that stuff's relegated to like airplane during the jive talking right. scenes.
Right.
Does it even exist
and
outside
Anthony
of
Michael
that?
Hall in Weird Science.
Right.
Yeah.
The chick cannot hold a smoke. That's what it is.
You can see that one too. Dang it.
That's on our list. That's on my wish list. I don't think it's actually streaming.
Yeah.
All right. Here's the real cop talking. Actual dude. Real cop on the movie.
We got it down pretty good. The guy's in the front. We got a couple cars in the back. Healed off pretty good. You're the best guys. I can't pick each one of them. Jackson, Lucas, Nico, they're all top shelf. You know how to do this. They've done it before.
I just got it. That's what Scott Fletcher was imitating.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
was
is
he trying to do that guy?
Play it again.
Okay, he's imitating that guy.
Wait, let's do this first part.
Above the law.
If he is, he's channeling like Muppets and stuff.
Right.
To do it.
But he's getting it.
I meant play the clip again.
Oh, sorry. Here.
Got it down pretty good. The guys in the front, we got a couple cars in the back. Healed off pretty good. You're the best guys. I can't pick each one of them. Jackson, Lucas, Nico, they're all top shelf. You know how to do this. They've done it before.
All right. So it's basically, he's like one of the dudes around the table of the Dap Bears
Swirsky,
thing.
Right. Yeah, totally. The Saturday Night Live skit.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, he's Chicago, and it does talk about, you know, he's from Chicago, and a lot of this is filmed there. It's supposed to be set there, I think. I don't know. That wasn't clear to me. Like, location.
Yes, it is Chicago.
Is it?
Right. Hey, I just got to say something about the Vietnam scene. Don't be throwing my feet in a basket. If you chop them off, don't do it.
What?
When? I don't know.
There was a basket with feet.
I've got notes from like a week and a half ago. And I'm trying to figure out what in the crap they mean.
He basically wants you to tell him, all right, this was in the movie or this wasn't in the movie.
Oh, I don't remember that being in the movie.
I don't either.
I think you were watching like Rambo and I don't know what you did. Here's another one. Oh, the biggest euphemism in the movie, which I thought was a little, I don't know, Pam Grier should have kicked him in the nuts for this, but here it is.
Well, tell how much you love it here.
Good God, now you know why I'm a vegetarian.
Well, you eat meat, man. I know you eat meat.
Oh, I'm a thriller.
I heard you eat meat.
You chump.
But that was, by the way, good example of most of the dialogue in the film. Lots of just sort of, like, no one's talking. Speak freaking up.
He reminds me, it's funny, I didn't realize this until I watched this again, but he reminds me of Mark Wahlberg and how he talks in films lots of times.
Say hi to your mother for me.
Say hi to your mother for you. Look at my DuckTales.
Now, Randy, you're probably the best person to be able to answer this, but is this, like, a lot of what we were just hearing in that dialogue, how it's, like, blocked out by a lot of the background noise, is that because they didn't have the actors come back in and re-record
Yeah. And also I think there's a twofer there. Like, you go ahead and you get good mics up and you capture the real ambience, as well as you don't have to bring those guys in for ADR. Like, it's just, it's it, like, yeah, it's, there's only so many people you can
but
do.
But there's
that
also
with
a lot of dubbing going on too. So I don't know, it was a weird
there
mix.
There was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Was there? Okay.
Near the beginning, not as much later on, but near the beginning.
And the very end.
Yeah.
And the very end had a ton of, in fact, it was almost out of sync.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, but ADR is the worst thing ever.
And for
actors who really, really know what they're doing, it sucks. For these guys, you don't even consider it. You just try to get them mic'd up and
can
use
you
those
imagine
ambience.
Steven Seagal be the worst post-production voiceover guy ever.
Mm-hmm.
Now try to match it up with the timing.
What am I supposed to say here?
Yeah, plus he's going to just hit you in the Adam's apple with the back of his hand and kill you. You can't keep him there very long.
I think I'd like to say it.
Did
like
you say it's hitting the back of the Adam's apple?
No, it hit you in the Adam's apple with the back of your hand.
Okay.
You know, the
you
back
hit
of the
so
Adam's
hard.
Apple.
You hit you so hard. And the back of your Adam's apple.
All right, here's this is short, but I like how he says it.
C4, my man.
That's what we're driving this car on. C4. You can't drive cars.
He's just barely
hear you over the hair dryer in the background.
He's just barely over audible sound. Like, there's so much background. Listen again.
C4, my man.
It's like, rah, rah, C4, my man. Rah.
Someone's making a smoothie on the counter.
Behind you. Yeah, smoothies in '88. I guess they did.
You want some more crushed ice, Mr. Seagal?
Here is the Mexican drug lord flipping out. I think he was supposed to be Mexican. I don't know. He may have been Puerto Rican or something. Very thick accent. He was flipping out about getting strangled on the car.
Oh, yeah.
And
this
I love this
Paul Reiser.
Yeah. Great. This is basically, this is Hispanic Paul Reiser letting off some steam. Check it out.
I'll tell you what this cop is. He's a fucking menace. He almost strangled me to death.
Your problem is being taken care of right now.
Oh, yeah? Well, it should have been handled 12 hours ago when my throat was in one piece. I mean, I don't know who's running this outfit here. But I tell you one thing. Somebody better get his wires straight. You don't know who you're dealing with. This maniac should be wearing a number, not a badge.
Not a badge.
That's awesome. When my throat was in one piece.
Let me get this straight.
Yeah, get your wives straight or something.
You strangled me.
Like, what was awesome about that is it was a callback to a scene from earlier in the film that was pretty cool, but it was a scene that was kind of out of place, right? Where he goes to get his cousin out of a coke den.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And this was the guy who owned the building or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I was thinking it was the other guy. You're right. You're right. Oh.
The girl, I got confused with the girl where he had to go find the girl, his cousin, I guess, or niece.
Right. Yeah, it was. Exactly, which makes,
And that was, she was at Paul McCartney's place, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, I got it.
This guy's
out.
All over this movie. The poor guy keeps getting his butt kicked.
Right, so the whole point of that scene is made clear. They're actually explaining why he's so rough, like why he's so pushy. Because the first scene in the film doesn't do that. The first scene actually shows him run away from a situation that he can't bear to witness. So like in the first scene, he's lawful good. And then by this time, he's become chaotic good. right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they have to explain that, so they have him go bust in and beat the crap out of his cousin's boyfriend, right?
Yeah.
And then rub his nose in the Coke. That was awesome. It's all the same way you... Yeah.
See, but that's the stuff you want from a Seagal movie, the just over-the-top, violent justice, you know?
Yeah.
And and for me, for my money, not quite enough of that in his first film. I think there was way better examples of this in his subsequent movies. I could have used more of it. Keep it in your pants, says Real Cop on set.
Now, as we all know, possession of these kinds of explosives are a federal offense. And fall immediately under the jurisdiction of the federal agencies represented there.
Somebody answer your damn phone.
The feds come in, the doors close, nobody hears, smells, or sees anything. And that's no answer. It's no answer as to why the biggest drug dealer in the city is out on the street as free as a f***ing bird.
Nico, keep it in your pants, right?
Nico, keep it in your pants.
I love that line.
That guy's awesome.
Above the law.
All right. let's see. How many potential titles? Oh, I know what this is. So I want you guys to try to pick out how many potential titles for unmade Steven Seagal movies are in this string of dialogue. I actually listened to it, and why I went back and captured it is because it sounds like about 10 movie potential names right here in this clip. Check it out.
You think you're rough stuff, Toscani.
Rough stuff. Okay, hold on. That's one.
Martial arts hero. Chop suey crap.
Martial arts hero. Chop suey crap. So one's a comedy, one's a serious drama. There's more.
Let me tell you something. You're not bulletproof.
You're not you're bulletproof. It's a good
bulletproof.
One.
Bulletproof. Yeah.
Good. More.
Let me tell you something. Might work.
Yeah, that might be in there. Whoops, I lost my place. There we go.
You're not even a good cop.
Not even a good cop.
Really?
I'd go see that movie.
Yeah, it sounds like a good one, right? There's more.
You sneak around playing your street dick games.
Street dick games.
Street dick.
Street dick games. Street dick games sounds so much like a Ben Affleck movie,
totally,
doesn't it?
Totally does. Yeah, so I'm not. These aren't all serious movies. Some of these are comedies, so there's more.
And all you come up with is conjecture, wild coincidence, and bullshit.
Conjecture, wild coincidence, and
that's
bullshit.
That's a trilogy.
That's a trilogy of Jim Carrey movies.
Or a very odd named accounting firm or a freaking lawyer firm.
Nice.
All right, there's more. I don't know if there's any more names, but there's more.
I want the name of the federal agent who signed for those explosives.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's all.
Okay. Federal agent explosives, yeah.
Yeah, that's
right, he's a vice cop that just feels like he can make demands on anyone who's in the room.
Well, he can. Look at him. I mean, even other guys are going, don't pull out your dick here. You know, geez, man, come on.
Oh, okay.
But see, this is the thing this is this train that Seagal missed. Well, maybe he didn't miss it. Maybe there was this was a short window of opportunity and he took it. But he has a look to him that is... Mm-hmm. That is really great for Hollywood. Like it's a face and a look and he can't act. That's for sure. At least not to, you know, a little bit better later, but he doesn't need to, cause he has this look that is, you know, it's Van Damme-ish.
Yeah.
It's good enough.
Actually, Van Damme does not scare me. Seagal scares me.
Well, yeah. And then why we never saw those two in a film together, and he didn't show up in Expendables, did he?
That's because they didn't like each other.
Yeah.
There was a big beef going on between Seagal and... Yeah, I mean, because, you know, Seagal's all like, Van Damme don't know karate. You don't remember all that?
I don't know. No, you wouldn't know it from his glowing IMDb self-biography.
Right.
That there were any problems in his life. Sounds like a bunch of happy times for everybody. All right, here's another one. Your own kitchen. Oh, this is the kitchen line. This is great.
If I find out your line, we'll come back and kill you in your own kitchen.
Yeah.
That's the Mark Wahlberg.
Your own kitchen. Yeah, it does sound. Yeah, I hear it.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. You're right. And that part where you could hear good vibrations in the background.
when he was talking to that guy, was that the guy who was driving the Speedo refrigerator repair truck? Because I don't want some dude showing up in a banana hammock to fix my appliances. No, sir.
Wait, we're still talking about this movie, right?
Yeah, you don't remember that?
No.
With the Speedo truck, Speedo refrigerator repair truck.
I didn't notice the name. No, that's
great. And it had a police siren built into it for some reason.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, exactly. Because it came down the street.
And,
yeah.
And they do a little car flipper on it. They have it pretend to drive up onto some trash cans and fall over sideways. And every one of us wanted so badly for a bunch of bikini underwear to fall out. Come on. Oh, so close.
That would have been great. No question about it.
Oh man!
Well, folks, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to what were you going to say?
Wait a minute! Wait, you didn't get to the.
So I didn't play the thing you think I was going to play. What was it?
So He gets over and over. He gets assaulted by various people that come along and look like an 80s Latino hair band. And
yes.
And my favorite one was that they try to execute him, this this Latin hair band from the 80s, and he managed to sneak around a car and pick him off by threatening the leader, and then gets them to all put their guns down, and then he shoots one of them right exactly in the heart, and then he marches all these. There's some really great dialogue because he marches his assailants into a store, and under a Sikh hat is Father Guido Sarducci. Right. And everything that guy says is comedy gold.
That's great.
Oh, no, not that. Oh, not that the was window.
That was a good scene.
I forgot about why didn't I record that whole damn thing?
Father Guido Sarducci.
Well, most of it was him just going, never, 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 because he's like a Sikh or something. But then toward the end of it, he finally starts going, nice and shiny, nice and shiny. And I'm like, boy, you know what? I would not buy at your store because I don't know what you're saying. Even the English is completely out of context. And
tell me in the comments on this blog post that wasn't Father Guido Sarducci.
I could see that.
It may have been him. Yeah, weird. I didn't think of him at the time, but I did. I did think that
it's
was
like,
pretty funny.
It's like there was like three or four different movies in this one movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
because I had totally forgotten about some scenes. I forgot about the priest stuff entirely because I kept feeling like that was another whole storyline that was going on.
Yeah. Yeah, that was
not interesting.
Very odd and weird. Speaking of odd and weird, hey, check this out.
Mm. It's awards.
It's award time.
Yes, awards.
It's awards season, you might say. For Film Sack, at least for this episode, the Mumble Award goes to this entire dumbass movie.
except Chelsea Ross.
Mm.
Chelsea Ross is freaking the southern sounding guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Never mumbles at all.
Yeah, he's cool. He just does like this.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody done touch that car. It's gonna explode.
And Matt, if he did mumble, it would be like some other language, right?
Yeah. He needs to do that the whole time.
He would go from sounding generally southern to sounding like from the bayou in Louisiana.
Yeah, exactly. The Fantastic Mullets of America Award goes to everybody in the movie. The Holy Crap, Does Steven Seagal Really Run Like That Award goes to Steven Seagal. I had a really hard time getting over that run. Like the first time he did it, I was like, what the hell is he doing?
You laugh and then it gets scary. Then it's like that T2 run where they're running away from
T1000, whatever his name is.
Yeah, yeah.
Robert Patrick. Yeah, but at least he looked like, I mean, Brandy said he looks like Richard Simmons trying to run. Just all gangly and weird in the way he used his hands.
Like Randy was saying, yep.
It felt like, I don't know, it was like watching. It's like watching.
Don't say Special Olympics.
It's like watching somebody eat like someone famous eat a popsicle or something. I don't know. That's not even a good example.
What?
Well, you know, like I don't know. It's hard for me to explain. It's like his weird
example.
It's his weird weakness. Best Sax Since Lost Boys Award goes to this movie.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
The Star Trek Award, thanks to Daryl the Trek Nerd for sending this in, goes to Thalmus Rusalala. Rusalala. Anyway, there's a lot of lalas in his name. Connected this way, above the law, he is deputy superintendent Crowder. Crowder. In Star Trek, he portrayed Captain Donald Varley in the Star Trek Next Generation episode Contagion in 1989. It would have been season 2 or 3. Not sure. Sorry, I sneezed with the cough switch. Now I sound like all nasally. Soundtrack, great. I'm giving it a big fat F-. I thought it was really, really bad.
Horrible. Worst soundtrack I've heard in a while.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, anybody disagree with that? It was bad.
No,
that
was bad. No, it was horrible.
I mean, Ibbit, what would you... I mean... Just
I'd give it a C for Chicago Sung by David Sanborn.
That's about it.
Yeah.
Oh, you're playing it too.
Oh, were you playing it?
Yeah.
Oh, you couldn't even tell.
I thought it was the same one.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Do you remember when that was
I've
good?
I've got that in my library.
Do you remember when that was big? That was big for. That was like he was always on Letterman playing that. Remember that back in the day?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was great. I mean, I love David Sanborn, but boy, that was 1987 David Sanborn, and it sounds like it.
Yep. Is he still working? Still doing the Jews?
He's still doing the Jews? released an album last year called Only Everything. A lot better, well, a lot more modern, a lot more current, with a bunch of covers on there, including a cover of Let the Good Times Roll featuring Joss Stone.
It's so weird when you start describing music. It feels like I'm listening to Coverville.
I slip right into
it. I know. You've only done 800 episodes or something.
Right, right.
All right. What else? Oh, Twitter. Dude, Twitter. 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy. How would you surmise this film?
Above the law, a vice cop with a daughter almost as old as him and a partner who dresses like Mrs. Huxtable at the North Pole takes down the local mob, the entire band Menudo, and a corrupt secret federal agency without messing up his hair. Crazy glue for the win.
Whoa. Fantastic.
That's what 5-hour energy could get you.
Yeah, yes. That's the truth.
Crazy Randy.
And then next, Mr. Brian Dunaway, what do you got?
Above the law, this is not the Jax you were looking for, in reference to the lady. You were thinking about the Mortal Kombat movie, which also has bad guys and mullets and martial arts. Slow down, Jackie Brown.
Could you say that at the end of everything from now on in the show? I think that would be great. All right. Oh, I did not mean to push that. Sorry, James Hong. Do you guys see that video I sent you of James Hong?
Yes, I did. Loved it.
What's going on there? Anyway, Ibbot, round us out.
Above the law, Steven Seagal's debut as a badass cop who goes after drug dealers and crooked cops. They're not above the law, and the only way Steven Seagal can stop them is to go further above the law. And he's skinny.
He's way skinny. Kind of not, and kind of a diminishing way. Like, it didn't, when he was all in the muscle wife beater stuff.
Yeah, the wife beater stuff.
He looked too wimpy to me.
Yeah, he did. He was very wiry.
Yeah. And then he ran. Whiny. And then it ruined it.
And whiny.
And then he ran again. All right. Well, here's what I learned while you guys were strangling each other over the roof of the car. They could have called this Overdub the Law. I'm undercover. Don't mind the huge freaking white earpieces sticking out of the side of my head.
Ooh, can I follow that one up?
Yeah.
If you lean back slightly in your seat while on a stakeout, the bad guys can't see you.
Nice. This is some good advice.
Yeah.
Okay. I wrote this last or the second to last one, and I don't know what it was, so forgive me. I don't know even what I was. We've done this a lot with this movie. I like his final torture scene poo face.
yeah, he made exactly. A bad face.
Oh, that's what it was. That's what it was. He was making a poo face when he was getting strangled.
He was making a bad face.
All right, thank you for reminding me. I could not remember what the hell I was talking about. And then finally,
there was a badassness movie too. Did you notice that?
Who was?
Everybody thought that was a badass in this movie. Every single person they came up against, they always had the same motive. They was always like, I'm going to come over and kick this little wiry guy's butt. And then they get their butts kicked.
Yeah, you have not seen me with that. You know, everybody had like a weapon or something that made them think they were great. And then he would just take them down.
Yeah.
And finally, car roof strangling. That's what I learned. I can't get enough of that. That was my favorite thing.
I need that scene on YouTube.
Yeah, it's pretty
bad. Or animated GIF.
It was pretty badass.
Remember those?
Yeah, because people love animated GIFs. Let's do emails. Got emails from listeners. Got one here from Rick. Rick says, hey, Scott, perhaps the reason they didn't kick... I'm sorry. Perhaps the reason they didn't kiss at the end of Caveman... Remember, I had the whole Ringo, why didn't he kiss her thing?
Yeah.
Was that Ringo and Barbara Bach were dating, and one or both of them decided to change the scene. That's just a guess. He doesn't know that.
Oh.
He's saying perhaps.
I thought he knew something.
Yeah, he did. But he does know this. He says, a bit of trivia. Barbara Bach is the sister of Catherine Bach, the original Daisy Duke from Dukes of Hazzard.
Right. Oh.
The fact that he calls him the original Daisy Duke makes me feel old. Because he means that's in reference to what? Jessica Simpson?
Simpson, yeah.
Anyway, I did not know they were related. By the way, Ibbot sounds more like Anthony Edwards, in my opinion, while Scott sounds like Adam Carolla. Cheers, Rick.
Weird.
Why does he think you sound like...
Anthony Edwards. Goose? You sound like Goose?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Great balls of fire.
You've been doing your Marty McFly on TMS lately, which I can never get enough of. I love that.
Doc, we got to get back to 1985.
That's awesome.
You know that new sound you were looking for? Oh, man.
Your kids are going to love this.
Dear FilmSack crew, says one more email from David Smith, teacher and designer of technology and wood shop at Sheffield, the UK, at some school there. I love how they always stick like the really prestigious teacher also with some shitty thing they have to do there, too. Not that woodworking's bad. I'm just, you know.
It's not.
But I know
what. Piss the spags off. Stop it.
I know, but I know how I was in wood shop. Yeah, an easy A, that's right. I like that movie.
Easy A.
By the
Easy
way.
Easy A.
I'm surprised how much I like that.
Have you seen the people who take shop?
Dude.
You mean Nine Fingers McGee?
You mean me? Dear FilmSack crew, first of all, congratulations on the show. It's really top stuff and a nice anecdote to the UK's more po-faced film review program where wit seems to be in short supply. For evidence of this, YouTube, BBC's Film Insert Year Here program. And program has two M's and an E on it. So this guy's from Britain. Ye old choppy. I was compelled to write in after attempting to watch the remake of A Nightmare on Elm Street. Was Jackie Earl Haley channeling Kristen Bale's Batman? And noticed a trope you may not have picked up on. And then he plays a trope alert, so I'll do it for him. He says, any film that portions are set in a high school, the lesson content is always relevant to the plot. You never see them in math or business studies lessons. Also, feel free to correct me. All the best. Keep up the good work. So you make a good point.
Yeah.
There's always some plot heavy, like if you're in science and it's E.T. You feel bad for the frogs because E.T. is at home.
I don't feel bad for the frogs.
Watching your TV and eating all your food.
I'm really having a hard time coming up with another with a counter example. Like in Superbad, I love it that they're in freaking home ec and they're in cooking specifically because it's like these guys have to do something really really nasty like when in their dialogue and so forth. So like, what's the ultimate? You know, like what classroom could you be the nastiest in? Well, there you go. Yeah,
home ec.
Have them make tiramisu.
Yep. Every time
you get Fast Times at Ridgemont High with isn't Ben Stein the teacher? No, not Ben Stein. The other
old guy,
dry guy.
Older guy. Yeah,
I love him.
And they go digging up. They go looking at corpses. And
I love that guy.
Yeah,
he's great. He's good in everything he ever did.
He is great. Yeah,
he died.
I can't remember his name.
I think he's dead.
You make love to that guy.
What? if you'd like to send us an email, you certainly can. filmsack@gmail.com. We'd love to read those. Scott Fletcher has some quotes before we leave from this film.
But how will he read it?
He'll read them. You know what? These are all normal on the tail end. I think he felt like he gave us enough of whatever this was. So here is number not a badge.
This maniac should be wearing a number, not a badge.
That's good advice generally. I think. Should have killed me.
There you are, my friend. Man, you should have killed me when you had the chance to.
Chance, that's terrible dialogue.
You're right.
But that's right out of the movie, so don't blame Scott. Kill you in the kitchen. This would be a great dial tone. This would be a great, can we ask the phone system to please make this the dial tone? That'd be great. This is a good ringtone.
If I find out you're lying, I'll come back and kill you in your own kitchen.
Oh, he says it so nicely.
Nico, let's finish everything with Nico.
Right. I like that idea. And then finally, you ain't above mine.
You guys think you're above the law. Well, you ain't above mine.
Yeah.
Or my eyebrows.
Yep. Nice work, Scott Fletcher.
I would like to hear Scott Fletcher say, nobody is above the law. Nobody is below the law. I just don't understand.
Like her fine.
So we're all, does that mean you're, is that,
we're
mean
in,
you're
it's one dimensional space and we're all on the same, we're all on the same line, right?
Right.
That's whatever, Zagon. So
if you're above the law, that means that you're, you know, you think that the law doesn't apply to you. If you're below the law, that means you over apply the law to everything you do.
No, wait. If you're above the law, you get away with crimes, right?
Yeah.
Right.
If you're below the law,
you're already in jail.
Yeah, you're like under the heel of the law.
Yeah, and if you're way above the law,
there is a hole in the roof.
And that's what we learned from this stupid movie. Next week, Lady Hawk.
Yay!
Oh yes,
getting back to the Broderick. Almost said Casey Kasem. What the hell's his name?
Val Kilmer.
Casey Kasem was in it though. That'd be awesome.
No,
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Rutger Hauer.
No, freaking.
It is Dabney Matthew Coleman. Broderick.
Broderick and
Matthew Broderick.
Dabney Coleman. Thank you.
Sean Connery.
Not since War Games have we had these two in our lives. So
that's right.
Yeah,
and it's our next Richard Donner film.
I forgot Donner even had anything to do with it.
It'll be our third, trifecta. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Third awesome. Donner film, wait. Superman 2. Yes. What else?
The Omen.
Oh, right.
Oh.
Was that Donner?
Very exciting.
All right.
Nice.
Well,
also, one of my favorite things about Lady Hawk, which I've not seen in forever, a very young Dr. Octopus.
Oh.
That's the best kind. Wait, Dr. Octopus, now, you mean the guy from...
my favorite cephalopod.
The guy from Super Spider-Man 2, that guy?
Spider-Man,
Alfred Molina.
Oh, Molina, yeah, he's you throw me the idol, daughter. I throw you the whip, yeah. You throw me the idol, that guy.
He was also in Boogie Nights, he had a crazy role in Boogie Nights.
I love that guy.
He's had a weird career.
He has. One of the new Law and Orders, the Law and Order LA or whatever.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Go a little higher. Go a little higher.
Is there a lady or a hawk in this movie? I just want to know.
He taught me lessons when I was young. He taught me that if you throw me the idol and I throw you the whip, he will then say,
"It's not a fair trade."
Adios. Or whatever, and then he'll get stabbed.
He'll just say, meh. You know what he does? And he just go, meh.
No, he doesn't just say, meh. He says, okay, so he throws him the idol. He throws him the whip. Indy's got the whip now.
He doesn't throw the whip. He drops the whip.
Oh, he drops the whips, and he says, but he says something. He says.
He goes, meh, and he shrugs his shoulder and goes, meh.
No, he doesn't just say, meh, and leave.
Peter Griffin or something there.
He sprouts four big octopi arms out of his back. I don't know what happens. Oh, anyway, man. We'll have to, one of these days, we got to do
Have we seen a Michelle Pfeiffer film yet on FilmSack?
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think we have. Which is
no,
too bad.
I think so, yeah.
I've seen a lady in the hawk.
The what?
She's a lady. Maybe she's a hawk.
She's still hot, dude. She's still a very pretty woman.
And see, Vincent Schiavelli, the biology teacher in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, he did pass away in 2005.
Oh. Oh, that's a ripe old age, though.
Yeah.
He'd have been
2005, yeah. Yeah.
And also, is it
didn't look a day over 2004.
Coming off a couple of weeks off here, scattered out over the last month, is it too much to tease that we're working on a little,
so here's what we're going to do.
We're working on a little thing for the feed.
Let's tell them this. So after Lady Hawk, you're going to get something kind of special. So Netflix now sports most of Star Trek. We're missing Deep Space Nine, but most of the rest of it's there. And we've been watching Next Generation, or a lot of us have. I know, Randy, you're up to season two now. I'm finishing season one. We're all at different spots. I know, Brian, you've been Dunaway. You've been kind of getting into it.
Yeah, I'm about halfway through.
Ibbot's been too busy rocking Vegas to
watch.
And
some of these episodes are hysterical.
They're ridiculous.
Dude, I can't believe. I remember watching Star Trek with my grandpa, and I remember watching the original series and thinking how stupid it was. And now I'm watching these, and I'm thinking, my kids have to think this is stupid.
Oh, of course they do. And my kids are way into it. We're way addicted, and everyone's really
enjoying
it.
But they love it. I loved it back then. So.
Yeah, so we're not hating on it. We love the Trek, but there is an episode called The Prisoner, I think it's called. Is it? I can't remember the name.
Justice.
Thank you.
Justice.
An episode called Justice. We think it's season one, episode seven, but it might be eight.
It is. It's seven. It's because episode it's the one seven. Where... Yeah, because
the reason I'm even confused is there's
I think it actually might be nine
because they count Farpoint as two episodes on the DVDs, but on Netflix they call it one.
On Netflix it's seven.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, for sure,
it's called Justice. We're gonna Trek sack this thing.
We're gonna do it now. We're not gonna do it like a normal show. It's gonna be like a commentary track like we do for movies, but we're gonna do it for this thing. Now this probably. Will be a relatively sort of one-offish kind of event. But if this goes well, oh, man, Star Trek doesn't know what hit it because we got ideas. Yeah. And we'll do this again. Yeah. But this just a reminder, the episode we're talking about features a average-looking man wearing nothing more than a paper napkin and a little bit of tape. And that is awesome.
It features about a dozen people wearing that napkin, too.
Yeah.
And it's a
lot. But that guy has no right like, to wear it.
There's so much to say. We'll get to it with the Justice. But, man, if we can, there are so many great episodes. I would love to have a discussion on our forums, by the way, frogpants.com. You can find a little link to the forums. Yeah. About the craziest, wackiest episodes of Star Trek.
Yeah, and we'll do them as commentary episodes and be a little bit more bite-sized. It'll be easier for us to consume, actually, because we can fit, you know, an hour long or really what it comes up to about 42-minute episode. Squeeze that into one of these recording sessions and it's no big deal for us. It's a lot easier than like say a whole film. I just think it'd be a whole lot of fun. I realize it's a stretch from the norm, you know, it's not movies, but
no, it's not. We do a Trek connection every week. I mean, this is the ultimate.
I agree.
During the whole episode, so all I'm going to do is I'm going to sit there and point out every Trek connection I see.
You got to go the other way. You got to go the other way. It's Breakfast Club connection right there. Breakfast Club. And we just had a Lady Hawk connection. Like, seriously.
Burned out porn actress suicide connection or whatever. Yeah, exactly. Nice. Or black plastic bag killing the worst character in the history of Star Trek connection. Woo!
Tremors connection.
Never, will never have any boobies.
I don't know. This
Not until we see Seven of Nine, right?
This Justice episode has lots of boobs. Too bad they're all on dudes.
Covered by napkins.
Oh. Yeah, they're all covered
No, they're
tape.
Not. The boobs, the man boobs are not covered by anything.
No, right, they're not at all. I'm not kidding.
It looks like they missed it.
It's like they walked into a restaurant, said, "Can I borrow your napkin?" and then stripped down and then walked out with this thing taped to their junk.
They didn't
it's ridiculous.
Walk, they ran out.
It's they ran out, dude.
Here's my favorite thing about this Trek sack concept.
Trek sack.
I went through and kind of picked out in the first 50 episodes, I picked out the four that I thought were the wackiest on The Next Generation. Every one of them was a heavy Wesley Crusher episode.
Yes! we're on the trail of eventually having Will Wheaton come on here and be on an episode, which I think he pulled the right strings, could happen. Mm-hmm. Don't forget to visit us on the website in the meantime, but do look for that in the next couple of weeks. Filmsack.com, filmsack@gmail.com is the email. We're on Twitter at twitter.com/filmsack. You can also find us at Mission Deep for Brian Dunaway, Coverville for Brian Ibbett, Randy Deluxe for Randy Deluxe, of course, and me, Extra Life. You can find us all individually as well. Also, all of us are now up on that Google Plus thing. Just search for us by name.
Totally.
We're on Facebook, facebook.com/filmsack. We're all over the damn place. You can't miss us. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Randy, for Brian, and for Brian. Oh, I did that wrong. For me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next week.
Settle down, Jackie Brown.
Nico.
And I'm going to count it down. You may be surprised by that.
Oh, that's what you do,
we
right?
We never do that. So this is a bit different today.
I thought you spell it down, actually.
This might throw me completely off.
I know. I'm sorry, dude. I don't want to take you off your groove.
You should spell it down. Spell the word exacerbate instead of counting.
I'm exacerbating right now.
M-A-S-T.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.